Catherine, let me start by saying to you thank you and the memory of Stephen. I don't think this would have gotten where it is today without your strong, strong support. And Sarah, you have been a board member and worked really hard to get to this point. And I also want to recognize Deputy Administrator Sharon Lewis, the administration of community living. And by the way, that's okay. Don't you worry about any of that, okay? I say to all my colleagues, and I say my colleagues because I served in the Congress for 36 years, and as they know, I actually think it's an equal branch of government because that's where I come from, and it is. And I want to compliment you all on the great job, and particularly Bobby. I'm going to be brief because I want you to hear from the people who made this happen. But, you know, I was thinking about it as I was coming over. When I was a kid, I was 29 years old, and I got engaged in public life, and I got elected to the Senate when I was 29. I wasn't old enough to be sworn in, for real. My birthday did not occur before my election, so I had to technically wait to be sworn in. And I remember the first real debate I ever was engaged in as a young senator. It was in the spring of 1973, and it was called the American Rehabilitation Act. And it was Senators Dole and Kennedy and others. And I remember walking in as a young fella to see the majority leader of the United States Senate on another matter. And I just left the floor of the Senate. My colleagues in the House and Senate will appreciate this. And there was a particular senator who later became my friend years later, who was railing against this legislation as government intrusion in people's lives. And I remember walking in to saying to Senator Mansfield at the time, "I don't understand so-and-so." And I was very harsh. I was very judgmental. I said, this guy has no social redeeming value. How can he not care about this? I was very — and what he said to me was at the time, he said, "What would you tell me, what would you say, Joe, if I told you that particular senator had just 2 years earlier adopted a young man who was 14 years old in leg braces up to his hips?" I said, "I'd feel foolish." And he taught me a lesson. He said, "Joe, it's always good, never apologize for being in a debate and questioning another man or woman's judgment, but never question their motive. You don't know their motive." But I know the motive of all of you in this room. The motive of all of you in this room is to reach out and afford opportunity to every single solitary American. And because of your leadership and the path that's been laid before you, all the work that I miss Tom Harkins. Tom Harkins, I refer to as the conscious of the Senate on these matters relating to Americans with disabilities. And you've all, both Republican and Democrat, have picked up this this cause. And the good news, I say, for all the parents in here of children with disabilities is that this is a constant step forward. We keep moving forward. We keep expanding opportunities. And I think it's inevitable. And I just want to thank all of my colleagues here. The reason I'm here is to reinforce that it makes not only economic sense, but it's a moral imperative for what you all have done here today. It's simply the right thing to do, but it's also overwhelming the economic interest of the country to do what you are doing. I want to thank all the self-advocates who remind us that the conversations about disabilities must be led by those living with disabilities and those and their families who deal with it every single day. I was saying to Bobby, we're old friends, before we came in, you know, but for the grace of God, but all of us have, if we do not have a child or a family member with disabilities, have a close friend, have other family members. We know it. We see it. We don't feel it. It's totally different than when you have to deal with it every day. But it's becoming a national consensus that we have to continue to do more. And I want to say a thank you to the parents and the siblings and the friends, the loved ones living with a disability who did everything they could, writing letters to your elected officials, raising awareness in your communities in order to get this law passed. I want to say a special acknowledgement, and although everybody, based on what the president always says, Joe Biden from Scranton, I really am from Delaware. I love Scranton, and I have great, deep roots there. But I am actually a Delawarean, and I'm so delighted that Princess Kayla is with us today. Kayla is from Delaware. Come on up here. Come on up here. Kayla. Like so many others here, has, if we didn't have a chance, an incredibly bright future. So many things that are going to be able to be done. And so many, by the way, I gave her one of my camps off. That was my representative camp. She thinks he's a Secret Service dog. But Kayla's going to take care of one, and they've all the other kids too. But the point is, this is the face of all these children, and not so many kids. We're doing it. This is what this is about. And I think that our... But the thing I love about my colleagues who did this is they get it. They understand it. They feel it. They taste it. And the most that we can do is make the rest of America aware of not just the problems, but of the great opportunities. You're going to hear in a little bit from a couple people who, quote, have disabilities, but you will not believe it when you hear from them. So people living with disabilities are entitled to the same dignity and the same respect afforded everyone else. And if given a half a chance, they can and do and will live independent lives. That's the dream of every one of you parents, that your child is going to be able to, long after you're gone, be able to live an independent life, be able to take care of themselves. But it doesn't mean that this, you know, when we talk about the ABLE Act, it's really kind of a simple proposition. As I said, all of you know, before the ABLE Act, an adult with disabilities or a family with children living with disabilities, they can receive Medicaid and Social Security income or other government benefits that provide health care and basic necessities. But there was a catch, and the catch was a pretty profound catch. If the family or the individual was able to save, but in most cases applied to the family, more than $2,000 in personal savings account, you would lose thousands of dollars in life-saving benefits. What most people don't know is that Medicaid is not just for poor folks. Medicaid is for those of you who spend as much as would require spending as much as $50,000 a year for children with certain disabilities and Down syndrome and other things. I mean, you could be making $125,000 a year and still not be able to make it without this kind of assistance. And what people often don't understand is that you love all your children. Kayla has a brother. I'm sure her mom is as concerned that her brother is able to get to college and be able to save to get her to college as it is that Kayla be taken care of and have an opportunity to meet her expectations. And so there are, and people who who are fortunate enough not to have to deal with taking care of us. That's the wrong word, fortunate enough, who don't have to deal with a child with disabilities. They know how hard it is to make it to begin with, just to put food on the table, just to make sure they have opportunities for their child. But we make them make tough choices up to now, up until you guys and women came along and changed the law. You know, there are multiple other needs that families have to meet. And no one argues if you're able, it makes sense that since the time your child is born to put money in a so-called 529 account to save, to be able to get your child to college. Well, if that makes sense, why in God's name does it not make as much sense for you to be able to do that to care for the needs of your child with disabilities as time moves on? Why? I mean, it just, there's no lot. And obviously, my colleagues figured out how to make that case to their colleagues, and it's changed. If you're a family looking to put away some savings to help your child manage disability-related expenses like a home health aid, you just don't save more than $2,000, because if you do, you lose up to $7,700 in Social Security income. If you're a parent dreaming to send your child to college, it's okay to have a tax-free savings account, but if you have a daughter with disabilities, you save the money, you end up losing money. And so it's not the kind of choice any parent should have to make. There are a lot of parents, and I know one of your concerns, as I said, is, and I have, like all of you, either a child with disabilities or, in my case, very, very close friends and family members with disabilities. The greatest concern I find with my friends is they're deathly afraid that by the time their child reaches 23 or 24 or 25, if they're on the edge of retirement, what's going to happen? What's going to happen to their child? And they worry about who's going to take care of them, what's going to happen. In addition to providing for the laws that have been passed to provide educational opportunities to be able to be educated to the degree to which one is educable, which is critically important, there is the hope that they'll be able to meet many of their own needs and be independent as possible. But there's still that feeling, that gnawing concern. So it goes to the heart of the president, it goes to the heart of what the president and I and all my colleagues, Democrat and Republican here, have been laser focused on, is that is just giving folks an even chance to meet their potential and an even chance to be able to have an opportunity to be in a position when extraordinary needs are required to be met, that there is some ability to save, to be able to meet those needs. And so the notion that somebody somewhere believes in these children and young adults and adults instills a heck of a lot of confidence. And that's what I think you members of Congress have done and you advocates have done. And so I want to thank Bobby. I keep calling you Bobby. I shouldn't be doing that. That goes back to Greenridge days. I apologize. Senator Casey and all your colleagues for doing something that is really worthwhile, important. And the parents in the room could tell every American it matters. It gives just a little bit greater peace of mind. And ultimately, that's the most important thing I think we can do, is just give a little bit greater peace of mind. So I thank you all very much, and I'm not sure to whom I'm to yield at this point. Are you going to come back up? Well, come on up. So thank you all for what you've done. I appreciate it. And I'm really honored to be a part of it. So I'm going to stick around and listen a little bit, okay? So.